If she gets suspended, I better too. Miss Saunders has got her arms raised, telling people to get to class. Me? I'm just wondering when she's gonna get out my life. Chapter 7. No television, telephone, or hanging out with friends for 3 weeks, all because of that fight. And that ain't even the worst part. The principal, Miss Saunders, and Mama got their heads together and came up with a way to punish me good. They say it ain't punishment, but it sure feels that way. They found me a job. A job that don't pay no money and ain't no fun at all. I don't even want it. But Mama's got her mindset, so that's that. I will be working in the school office, filing papers, stapling letters, that kind of stuff. This is Miss Saunders' bright idea. She talked it over with Mama last night on the telephone. I could hear some of the conversation coming through the receiver. Miss Saunders was saying something about me wasting my potential, that the school needed a better way to keep up with me so I don't fall through the cracks. And Mama believes all that crap, when the truth is that Miss Saunders is just a big mouth, bossy broad who likes to throw her weight around and treat everybody like they are some broken pot she's got to patch up. I could smell the peppermint tea Mama was sipping while she spoke to Miss Saunders. Malika's got more potential than she's letting on. Keeping her under the principal's nose may be just the way to get her back in line. Mama and Miss Saunders talk a long time. When they're done, I try to tell Mama that Miss Saunders doesn't know what she's doing, that she ain't even a real teacher. Mama says she doesn't care. She likes her. That Miss Saunders is the first teacher who ever called here to talk about what was going on with you. I like that. It shows she's concerned that this job ain't just about the money. I tell Mama that Miss Saunders don't need the money. She got plenty. Don't it make you wonder, Mama, why somebody with all that money and a good job would give it up to come to McClinton? Mama sits there for a while thinking. I wouldn't think on it too much, Malika, she says. She's here, that's the important thing. No way is Mama gonna let me not work in that office. She even threatens me, saying if I try to get out of it, she will take away all my rights at home. So I figure, cool, I'll do it. And while I'm doing it, I will find out the real deal on Miss Saunders. Get all up in her business like she's up in mine. Payback, you know. So on the first day I work in the office, I ask Miss Carroll, the secretary, about Miss Saunders. Miss Carroll likes to gossip, so I figure she'll tell me something. But Miss Carroll just stares up at me with her arms crossed.
You're here to work, right?
Right? I say, biting on the dry skin hanging from my lip.
Then do your work and stop minding grown folks' business.
Maxine, the other girl working in the office, is acting like she's filing papers. I know she's listening, though. I leave Miss Carroll standing there with her arms folded, and I file my stuff like she says. Turns out, I don't need her to tell me about Miss Saunders. It don't take me long to start piecing stuff together from the other teachers. They complain about her every chance they get.
If you ask me, that program doesn't work one bit, Mr. Mack, the science teacher, says. A school doesn't run like a corporation. Things don't happen at the snap of a finger or the drop of a pen. Change takes time.
A bull in a china shop, that's what she is. Miss Benson, the librarian, says under her breath. She's not following the curriculum the way it's laid out. She's pushing the kids too hard, telling them to read 50 pages one night, 30 pages the next. I'm telling you, hiring her was a bad move. If those teachers knew I was working at the desk, they would be more careful.
but they don't know I'm here. I've dropped some paper clips on the floor, and I'm crouching under a desk to pick them up slowly. It looks like nobody's around but Miss Carol, and she's in the back Xeroxing. Maxine is running errands. When I stand up, Mr. Mack gets all red-faced. He thinks I'm trying to beat a smart aleck. His lips curl up tight.
My mom, Malika, aren't you the lucky one? Here to work in the office, I see.
He says, stomping out the door right into Mr. Bajoli, who's heard everything he said.
Sometimes, Mr. Mack, you need new ideas to do things differently. Nothing wrong with a little change, is there?
He asks.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bajoli, but the way I see it, rewarding those who misbehave and refuse to play by the rules is wrong.
Dead wrong.
How will you reward the good ones? Put them on detention?
Mr. Mack asks.
They're all good ones, Mr. Mack. Some of them just need more support than others.
Mr. Mack makes a clicking noise with his tongue. He and Miss Benson walk down the hall together side by side. We all think those two got a thing going on, even though we never see them kiss or even hold hands. Mr. Bajoli tells me not to worry, that things will work out fine for me if I try hard enough. All the time he's talking, I'm trying to figure out how I can cut this gig loose. I mean, let's face it, I got better things to do with my time than work for free.
Chapter 8.
The only reason Mama lets me off restriction at home is because I started that new job, and she thinks that's gonna change me somehow. I don't tell her, she's out of her head. Shoot, I'm just glad I can watch TV and talk on the phone again. After all, it is Saturday. But I can't talk on the phone right this minute because as soon as my girl Sweets comes over to my house, she hogs the phone. Sweets' mama is super strict. She never lets Sweets on the phone. So here she is, laying across my bed on her stomach, with her short legs waving in the air every time Larry says something to her. Neither one of us is supposed to talk to boys, but we do every once in a while. With the way Sweets is acting, you'd think Larry could see her. She's putting lip gloss on her lips, combing her hair, brushing off her clothes. Sweets has been liking Larry since she was 6 years old. She thinks he likes her, only he's so shy you can't tell. All he ever talks about with her is basketball. They're talking about the game the Knicks won the other night. If you could see that big smile Sweets has got on her face, you would think Larry's just said he loves her. Sweets and me been best friends since kindergarten. She goes to the school across town, the school for smart girls with attitudes, she likes to say. I could have gone there. My grades were as good as Sweets's. Better, in fact. Only I changed my mind at the last minute. I went to the interview and wouldn't answer one question they asked. Mama was so embarrassed. She cried all the way on the subway ride home. I didn't plan it that way. I just froze, I guess. The school is so big, so clean, so fancy. And them girls, they look like they come out of a magazine. Long, straight hair, skin the color of potato chips and cashews and Mary Jane candies. No Almond Joy colored girls like me. No gum-smacking, wise-cracking girls from my side of town. That didn't bother Sweets none. She says she deserves to be in that school as much as anyone. You got the right color skin, I said, poking her fat, tan face.
It's not about color, she said. It's how you feel about who you are that counts.
Huh, she said, twirling around on her toes like a ballerina with bad feet.
I'm as good as the Queen of England, the President of the United States, and 10 movie stars all rolled into one.
so they better let me in at their school or else," she said, shaking her fist up to the sky. I guess Sweets' attitude paid off. They let her into that high-tone school. Up till last year, Sweets and me did everything together. Now all she does is study.
I gotta keep up, she says. Getting straight A's in this school ain't like getting A's in our old school. You sweat to get these A's. Gotta half die to keep 'em.
Sweet's been on the phone for a half hour already. I tell her to cut it. She says to give her 5 more minutes. That really means 15 minutes, so I go back to doing what I'm doing. Looking at all the junk I got under my bed. Socks, cards, dust, an earring I've been looking for. A piece of old hard toast. And the mirror I ain't seen for a while. It's a cheap little thing, but Daddy gave it to me a long time ago, so I try to hold on to it. It's got a pink plastic handle with little white bunnies painted on it. I check my face out in the mirror. That cut from Daphne's ring is gone. Mama says I'm like Daddy. I heal fast. That ain't the only thing Daddy and me got in common. I got his eyes. Dark, almond-shaped eyes with long, thick black lashes. My lips, they're like Mama's, full and wide. They look like that actor's lips on TV. I can't think of his name just now, but he's got the kind of lips that make you want to kiss him quick. Soft, smooth, pretty-looking lips. My nose and my ears, I don't know where they came from. They don't look like Mama's or Daddy's. My nose is small and pug. Daddy used to always pinch it when I was little. I am the same color Daddy was. When I was little, he would come home from work and say, "I sure could use me a warm cup of cocoa." That meant for me to give him a big hug and lots of kisses. I like that. I didn't used to mind being this color. Then kids started teasing me about it, making me feel like something was wrong with how I look. And when Daddy passed away, that just made things worse. I stare at myself for maybe 20 minutes in Daddy's mirror. I don't get it. I think I'm kind of nice looking. Why don't other people see what I see? I think. Out of the blue, I get an idea. I'm gonna cut my hair. Cut it real short, like the girl on the cover of the magazine laying on my floor. I yell for Sweets to get off the phone. She ain't listening. She's smiling at something Larry just said to her. "Off the phone," I yell so he can hear. "Off the phone, before I tell Larry you like..." Before I finish the sentence, Sweets is hanging up and hitting me over the head with a pillow. "You know that ain't right," she says, whacking me good. I tell Sweets I'm gonna cut my hair. I'm gonna cut it real close. "People gonna see I ain't who I used to be," I say. "You gonna cut your hair off like bald?" Sweets asks. "Well, not that off. But close, like this," I say, showing her the picture. Sweets helps me take out my braids and lets me know that I shouldn't be trying nothing like this by myself. "If you jack up your hair, you really will look a mess," she says. Then she tells me how her cousin Ronnie just opened up a shop on the avenue. "I don't have money to go to no shop," I tell her. Sweet says that her cousin did her hair for free last week, and all she had to do was sweep up the floor. Sweets calls her cousin for me, and her cousin says, yeah, she will cut my hair, but I have to give her 3 Saturdays worth of work. And I have to bring a note for Mama saying the cut is okay with her. It takes me 2 hours to talk Mama into this thing. I don't tell Sweets or Mama the real reason that I'm doing this. that I want a new look like that model in the magazine, so that maybe people will start to see me differently and treat me differently. Mama and Sweets wouldn't understand me saying nothing like that. So I just keep my mouth shut while Sweets and I walk to the avenue. Ronnie tells me to leave things to her. She puts a texturizer on my scalp till it loosens up my hair. Then she washes the texturizer out. When she is finished, it seems like 10,000 tiny black shiny curls was all over my head. Ronnie takes out the clippers, gives me some points on the side, and evens up the back of my hairline. She says. Now you got to have a little attitude when you wear this cut. You got attitude, Malika? She asks with her hands on her hips. I look at her and ask what she means. Then a woman comes out from under the dryer. She takes off her clip-on earrings and asks Ronnie for some alcohol. She cleans them clunky things off and clips them on my ears without even asking me. This is one of those hairdos you strut your stuff in. Sisters wearing these know they're sharp, Ronnie says, taking out the clippers and going at my hairline again. I'm looking in the mirror, and I can't believe my eyes. I like what I see. You got any lip gloss? She asks me, turning me around in the chair, still checking out my hair. I dig in my pocketbook and pull out some red lipstick from Murphy's drugstore. You're too young to be wearing lipstick, Ronnie says. She makes me stick my finger in the gigantic jar of Vaseline she keeps near her mirror, and I rub a little on my lips. When Ronnie's finished, the three other hairdressers get all up in my face, and so do some customers. One woman's got relaxer cream all over her head. They're all talking about how good I look. Sweets is nodding and smiling and agreeing with everybody. Give me some attitude, Ronnie says, taking off my cape. I have my head down and my arms crossed. Another woman comes out from under the dryer and starts strutting across the floor. Attitude, girl, she says, switching her butt around, dipping and turning like a fashion model. Attitude, Sweet says, getting into the act. Everybody turns and looks at me. I start snapping my fingers and walking around like I'm somebody. I look good. The woman who's giving me her earrings comes over to me and puts her hands on my hips. You gotta shake 'em hard. Make people know you mean business. I start pushing my hips from side to side, taking long steps, and putting my arms out like I'm on a runway someplace. You go, girl, a woman says. Shake it. Shake it, don't break it. You do look good, Malika, Sweets agrees. That cut is you. A new customer comes into the store and over to Ronnie. The woman with the earrings gets herself back under the dryer, and the other lady goes back to getting her relaxer washed out. I get Ronnie's broom and start sweeping up. Chapter 9. On Monday, Miss Allen, the art teacher, does a double take when I walk into her class. I know she wants to ask me what happened, but teachers can't always just come out and ask you stuff like that. Kids, they're different. As soon as I walked into the school building, they were all over me, wanting to know why I didn't have no hair. I expect John John not to like the cut. I mean, what does he like about me anyhow? Nothing. And I expect Charlize and the twins to say they don't like it, even if they secretly do. In third period, kids really light into me. By fourth period, I'm wearing the baseball cap I brought from home, just in case. Mr. Klein, the social studies teacher, tells me to take off the hat, but I give him some lame excuse and he lets me keep it on. The next thing I know, somebody's yanking off the hat and making cracks about my peanut head. I don't get it.
I mean, I look good. I know I do.
Desda comes up to me and says I shouldn't let them get to me. I tell her I'll check her later. I go to the bathroom. Nobody's in there yet. I look in the mirror and start crying. You know, Malika, I hear myself say, you can glue on some hair, paint yourself white, come to school wearing a leather coat down to your toes, and somebody will still say something mean to hurt your feelings. That's how it goes at this school. I walk around that bathroom trying to think of what to do. I start reading some of the stuff on the walls. Char and worm forever. Wash me. If you like school, you stupid. I sit myself up on one of the sinks and think back to Saturday when I got my hair cut. Tears come to my eyes when I put my hands on my head and feel my little bit of hair. I mean, I know I asked for it and that it looked good at Ronnie's place, but seeing it in the school bathroom mirror is something else. I jump off the sink and lean close to the mirror on the wall and think of Daddy. Malika, he used to say, you gotta see yourself with your own eyes. That's the only way you're gonna know who you really are. I reach down into my bag and pulled out the little hand mirror Daddy gave me and look at myself real good. My nose is running. I blow it and throw the tissue away. I splash some water on my face and pat it dry. I reach deep down into my pocketbook and pull out the little jar of Vaseline and shine up my lips. Then I ball up my cap, stuff it in my backpack, and walk right on out of there. Chapter 10. We need a new alarm clock. Ours rings whenever it wants. 2 in the morning, 10 at night. It don't matter. But you can be sure of one thing. It ain't never gonna ring when it's supposed to. When Mama comes in my room telling me I'm gonna be late if I don't get a move on, I ain't surprised. It's the 3rd time this week I'm late because of that clock. So I just ignore Mama, pull my quilt up over my head, and turn over. Mama does what she always does. She pulls the covers off and threatens to yank down the sheet. I'm up, I'm up. I sit on the edge of the bed, hands folded, head drooping. My eyes are still closed when Mama goes back downstairs to cook breakfast. I wash up, then look through my closet for some jeans or something. I push my way past that new shirt Mama made and hope she don't ask me about it. I don't want to hurt her feelings, but one shoulder is higher than the other one. She fixed it 3 times already, but it just ain't working. I don't want to tell her that, though. Sweets ask me all the time why I don't just tell Mama I don't want to wear her stuff. But I can't. Mama needs to keep sewing. If she don't, I ain't sure what's gonna happen to her. When I finally get to the kitchen table, the oatmeal's cold and slick, like silly putty. I eat dry toast instead. Mama gives me the once-over. She comes and straightens up my turtleneck collar. She made this one, too, but the woman across the street helped her with it, so it ain't so bad. Mama is dressed in a blue uniform. Today, she got herself some different kind of tea. It smells more like chicken noodle soup to me. She's stirring it and stirring it, but not drinking it. I kiss her quick on the side of the head. She don't even notice. She's eyeing the newspaper like she does every morning. 2 newspapers are spread wide open on the kitchen table. Every once in a while, pages slide onto the floor or get greasy from some eggs or bacon Mama eats while she's reading. Mama's always got to know what's happening in the stock market. She sews my clothes to save money so that she can play the stocks. She thinks we'll be rich one day, but she never invests any money. By the time she gets a few $100 saved up here and there, the pipes start leaking or the roof needs fixing. Or Mama gets one of her dreams, where some dead relative comes back and tells her to play the lottery and put all her money on some number they told her about, like 557, 810, or 119. It never fails. Mama loses all the money, every dime. But that's the kind of luck we have. Dumb dead relatives who go out of their way to interrupt your good night's sleep to give you a lucky number that only brings you bad luck. Now who needs that? Mama never gives up, though. She's always looking for new ways to make money. She sold Tupperware, magazines, and pretty junk for kitchen walls. We're still poor as dirt. A lot of folks think Mama don't have all her marbles. I can tell by the way they talk to her, kind of loud, like folks do with crazy people, with a smirk on their face, like they know a secret she don't. But the joke's on them. Mama's the smartest person in the world. She's a math whiz and can add numbers faster than anybody I know. Sometimes she embarrasses me. She's the type of woman that will put down her groceries and jump rope with 8-year-old kids on the street. She will play stickball with the boys in the neighborhood and argue with the winos on the corner over who's going to win the next election. Sometimes my friends laugh at Mama. But when I start to complain, Sweets and them tell me to shut up. They know, like I do. Ain't no one in the neighborhood got a heart bigger than my Mama. I blow a kiss to Mama, and I rush past her and head for school. She says in the only French she knows, "Je t'aime, ma petite." I love you, my little one. And then she goes back to her stocks. I hear her mumbling something about General Electric stock falling 20 points. I have no idea what that means. Ain't sure Mama does neither. Chapter 11. McClinton Middle School ain't the kind of place where you want the lunch ladies mad at you. No matter how bad the food looks or smells, you best keep your mouth shut. If you don't, you can end up with hair in your spaghetti, pencil shavings in your pizza, pepper in your milk. But something's got into Charlize today. She acts like them lunch ladies won't cause her no trouble. When she goes through the line, she says the hamburgers look like burnt dog doo-doo. Miss Brown, the lunch lady who's serving, don't say nothing. She just clears her throat and runs her hands through her short gray hair. By the time Charlize gets out the line, there it is, lettuce in her milk. Dried up food on her fork, something indescribable on her hamburger bun. Me and her can't figure out what it is, but we think it used to be alive. I bring my own lunch from home, and I tell Char she can have it. Today I got a bologna sandwich. Char don't want no part of it. She slams her lunch tray down on the table. The whole place gets quiet. "They better give me some decent food," she yells loud enough for all the lunch ladies to hear. Miss Brown just keeps stirring peas and wiping sweat. "Move out of my way," Charles says to a girl sitting at the table. She don't even give the girl a chance to move before she flicks a handful of them greasy, rock-hard peas in her face and dares her to say something about it. The girl knows what's good for her. She wipes the slimy pea juice off her chin and moves on. "Serves you right," Char says, drying her wet hands on my backpack. "Next time, she'll get out of my way before I ask." "They gonna give me what I pay for," Char says. She shoves her lunch tray at me so fast, it almost slides off the table. "Take it back, Malika. Tell him I want another plate. Now." I look at Charlize like she's crazy. "They won't take it from me. You know that Char? I say in a dry, shaky voice. Charlize doesn't say nothing at first. She just stares at me without blinking for the longest time. Do I have to jack you up right here in front of everybody? She asks, slapping one of the twins' five. I said you could have my bologna sandwich, I say. But Char turns to me with her hands on her hips and a face that says, I know you ain't talking to me. I don't have no choice. I pick up her tray and get back in line. It seems like 20 kids are in front of me. By the time I get to Miss Brown again, my stomach is growling. Miss Brown ain't smiling one little bit when she sees Char's tray. I tell her what the problem is. She says she'll take back the food, only not from me. Char starts yelling at me from way back in the lunchroom. Everybody can hear her. A teacher tells her to shut up, but the teacher can't make Char's eyes stop digging into me. Miss Brown cuts me a break and starts throwing the old food in the trash. I stop her when she gets to the hamburger bun with that stuff on top. Leave it, I say quietly. She looks like she wants to say something else. Then she waves her hand at me, looks at the kid in the line after me, and says, Next. Char's yelling, Hurry up, Malika! I take the tray with the same old hamburger bun on it over to the side of the cafeteria where the ketchup and mustard packs are. I scrape the yuck off the top of the bun and smear it on top of Char's hamburger. Then I squeeze ketchup and mustard on the meat and take the whole thing to Char. Char snatches the tray out of my hand. She opens up the hamburger bun and picks up the meat. She puts it to her nose and sniffs it like she does to all of her food. Then she drops the burger back on the bun and covers it with the other piece of bread. What? You think she's spinning it? Raina asks. Please, just eat so we can go. Char laughs and takes a big bite. Get lost, Malika, she says with her mouth full. I don't ask no questions. I pick up my lunch bag and head for another table with this big grin on my face. Desda is over in the corner by herself, so I go and sit with her. Soon as I get there, my sandwich falls out of the paper bag and onto the floor. Mama loves salad oil. She thinks it's good for your heart. Sometimes, like today, she gets a little heavy-handed with it, and it leaks all over the place. Desda leans down and picks up my sandwich and hands it to me. I wipe off the cellophane with a tissue, unwrap it, and start eating. While my mouth is stuffed with bologna and bread, Caleb comes over and starts telling me how good I look. Oil is oozing out the sides of my mouth as quick as I can wipe it off. Caleb don't seem to notice. He just keeps right on talking. I need to talk to you, Malika, he says, taking a napkin and wiping some oil off my chin. I tell Caleb I've got to talk to him some other time, that me and Desda are going over homework right now. He says he'll talk to me later and heads out of the lunchroom. Charlize stops him before he goes. She's all up in his face. He doesn't pay her no mind. He just keeps on stepping. Sometimes I can't help but wonder if Charlize wants Caleb because she knows he wants me. Desda acts like I really meant what I said about her and me doing homework. She starts asking me if I've done the math homework, which I haven't, of course. But that don't stop Desda. She pulls out the homework anyhow and asks me 10,000 questions about the math problems. They are as easy as pie, and I tell her so. Before I know it, I'm doing the work for her. If the homework's so easy, why didn't you do it last night? She wants to know. Don't go there, I say. I worked on them problems for 3 hours straight, Desda says, stuffing chips in her mouth. After that, I finally gave up and started watching TV. Desda's homework paper starts to spot from her greasy fingers. 20 minutes later, we head for the door. Char's still sitting at the front of the cafeteria. Boys are crowded around so that all you can see is them purple shoes of hers and that tight black designer skirt. When she stands up to leave, one boy puts his arm around her waist and whispers something in her ear. She laughs, but you can tell she's faking it. She puts on her sunglasses and walks toward the door with them boys following her like she's a movie star. Before she leaves, she looks over my way and pulls her sunglasses down past her nose so they're leaning on her top lip. She stares me down, then whispers something to one of the twins and keeps on stepping. "Ignore her," Desda says. The next thing I know, Raisa is coming my way. Char wants to know if you've done her math. I reach in my book bag and pull out some papers. Char and them are in a different math class than me. It's a class for kids who don't have a clue what's going on. I hand the homework to Raisa. "I didn't have time to do the social studies," I say, lying through my teeth. The social studies paper is still in my bag. It's the first time I don't give Char what she asked for. "Did you do mine and my sister's?" Raisa wants to know. I hand the other math papers to her. As we leave the lunchroom, Desda says I shouldn't do nothing for them. "Yeah, right," I say.
Chapter 12. The next day, I'm waiting in the bathroom, seems like forever. No Char. She's punishing me for getting out my place yesterday, I guess. When Char says come, you come. When she says do this for me, you do it, or else bad stuff happens. I didn't give Char her social studies homework yesterday, so no clothes for me today. Now I got to go to class in Mama's things or wear the clothes Char gave me yesterday. I got them here in my backpack. They're folded small as a bag of bread. They're wrinkled worse than Caleb's grandmama's face, though. I don't have much choice, so I keep on my own clothes. I stretch my arms toward the mirror. Not bad. Sleeves is even. Buttons sewed on straight. The seam down the shirt sleeve is crooked is all. Could be worse. I'm thinking maybe I'll skip class. Miss Saunders gave me this here book the other day. Life of a Slave Girl, it's called. She said maybe it would help me with my writing. I've already read it twice. I stayed up all night reading it 2 days ago. I read it with a flashlight under the covers so Mama wouldn't holler. That book made me cry. It made me think about Akilma and what was waiting for her once the boat docked. While I'm still deciding if I'm going to skip class, I tell myself that I'm only going to read Life of a Slave Girl for 5 minutes. The next thing I know, the late bell is ringing. I'm shoving that book in my book bag and running down the hall. "Walk, Miss Madison," a teacher says to me. "And pick up that paper you just dropped." Good thing nobody sees what is on my paper. It's another one of them Akilma letters. "Dear Diary, when you are hungry, really hungry, even mush crawling with maggots tastes good. So I can't help licking my lips when that girl put the last fingerful of my food in her mouth. A thief, that one is. Yesterday I grabbed her hands and tried to take back what was mine. It fell to the floor and someone else scooped it up. She is a lion who cares for no one but herself. Akilma." I'm almost to Miss Saunders' room when John McIntyre starts up with me again. "New clothes, huh?" he says, trying to be smart. I stop walking and turn to him and ask real smart-like, "Why are you always picking on me?" I ain't sure what's come over me. I guess thinking about Akima makes me wonder why people treat others like they're nothing.
Chill, Malika,
John says, strutting down the hall alongside me. He gets quiet, and I hear his big sneakers squeaking every time they hit the floor. Then I say something that surprises us both.
Why me?
He knows what I'm asking. He keeps on stepping.
Why do you hate me?
I ask, looking right at John. His cheek twitches.
You buggin', girl,
he says. I look at him like he's crazy. John's been hating me all my life, it seems. Now he's standing here denying it.
I don't think nothing about you,
he says, jerking up his pants. Seems like nobody's in the halls but me and John. Only there's plenty of kids around, pushing and shoving one another out of the way. The teachers are trying their best to move all us kids along, but it ain't working so good.
That song you sing about me ain't right, John,
I say.
It just ain't right.
So what? You ain't all that, you know.
All what? I want to ask.
But John don't give me a chance. He says I got what I deserved on the bus that day. He says since the first time he met me, I acted like I was better than him. I'm looking at John like I ain't never seen him before.
Better than him?
When I do that?
He says something stupid crazy. Says it was back in second grade when I first moved to the Heights.
I walked into class that first day with my new pink polka-dotted dress on and black patent leather shoes. The teacher told me to sit in the desk next to his. I said I didn't want to. I wanted to sit in the one up front next to Caleb.
That half-white punk,
John says, knowing full well Caleb ain't mixed. Now my mouth's hanging open.
I didn't even know Caleb back then, I say.
I wanted to sit up front 'cause I couldn't see the board, I explain. Looking at John, I tell him,
you hated me all these years for something I didn't even do.
No matter, he says. You've given me plenty of reasons not to like you since then, thinking you super smart, acting like you too good for me.
I tell John how things really is. I'm failing all my classes. Char's on my case all the time. I gotta borrow clothes to look like somebody.
Good, John says. You always thought you was better than me. Now look at you. You just as bad off as the rest of us. Worse, maybe. Caleb don't want no part of you now, I bet.
Now John's bobbing his head up and down, laughing like this whole thing is funny.
John looks at me like I'm dirt or something. I swallow hard. I think about what Daddy once said about not seeing yourself with other people's eyes. I keep on stepping. When I open the door to Miss Saunders' room, John's right behind me. For once, Miss Saunders not getting on my case about being late. Then it hits me. John McIntyre is jealous of me.
But why?
I sit there for about 5 minutes trying to figure this thing out with John before I notice Miss Saunders ain't here. It's seeing Worm with his narrow butt parked on Daphne's desk that makes me know something's not right. When I look up front, nobody's there but two kids drawn on the board. I guess Miss Saunders is sick.
All right, a substitute, I say. No work today.
Before I can even smile good about it, Miss Saunders comes flying into the room.
Sorry I'm late, she says, all out of breath.
I'm sorry you're here, I whisper.
Chapter 13.
Why do teachers tell you stuff you don't want to hear? Like how wonderful their children are, or how big their house is, or what a quiet, pretty neighborhood they live in. It's Miss Saunders' turn, I guess. She comes in telling us she's late because her toilet ran over and she had to clean her white carpets before they got stained. Like we really care. She presses her hands against her gray pinstripe pantsuit, then pulls the jacket sleeves down. No gold bracelet today. Just a watch on one arm and a thin gold necklace around her neck. Miss Saunders is a motion machine this morning. She sets down her briefcase, throws her black bag into the closet up front, slaps her hands together like giant paddles, and tells everybody to get quiet. Then she fans herself with her hand. My landlord had to come over. She's opening and closing drawers, looking for who knows what.